If you're running a business right now, you're playing a game where the rules keep changing. Trade tensions, economic uncertainty, culture wars, the world is rapidly changing around us. And companies, especially independent and local businesses, are having to adapt faster than ever. That's why Mission Critical is evolving. We're diving deep with the founders, CEOs, and entrepreneurs who are navigating this chaos in real time. The ones making the tough calls, pushing through unpredictability, and proving that resilience isn't just a buzzword, it's a survival skill. How do you scale in an economy that feels like it's on shaky ground? What happens when US policy shifts send shockwaves through Canadian industries? And in a world where diversity, healthcare, and economic resilience are becoming battlegrounds, how do businesses double down instead of backing down? These are the real conversations that matter to business leaders right now. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. What does it mean to be a modern Inuk woman? And who gets to define that? That's one of the many bold questions North of North poses. It's the first large-scale TV series shot in Nunavut, co-produced by CBC and Netflix, and presented by APTN, with over 500 locals cast as background actors and a $23 million impact on the Canadian economy. But beyond the numbers, it's a groundbreaking show that shatters stereotypes about the North, showcasing Inuit life as vibrant, joyful, and deeply layered. At the center of it all is Anna Lamb, an actor, advocate, and rising star who's just getting started. From challenging the white savior narrative to celebrating the complexities of being a young Inuk woman, Anna brings humor, heart, and unapologetic authenticity to the screen. And with a new project alongside Brad Pitt on the horizon, her influence is only growing. Today, Anna joins me to talk about the power of storytelling, the radical act of centering joy in Indigenous narratives, and why North of North is more than just a TV show, it's a cultural moment. This is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. Hello, Anna. How are you? Welcome to the Mission Critical podcast. How's it going today?
Good. Happy Friday. Thank you for chatting with me today.
Happy Friday. And first of all, can I just say huge congrats on North of North. It's such a powerful show and it's making history in like so many ways. How has the ride been? Like, how has the experience been for you?
Thank you. Yeah, it's been, everything has been more exciting, more incredible than I could have dreamed of. And the way that people are responding to the show is even more than I expected. And the demographics that the show has reached and the people who are responding to it, it's been so exciting to kind of, in creating it and just in reading the scripts, it was always something special. What the showrunners had created was always something special. And as we were filming it, it, felt like we were really doing something. And now to see it in completion and getting to share it with people has been just a really wild ride, but one that I'm so grateful to have been a part of.
I mean, I feel like you can just tell just in the opening credits when you watch the show that it does feel like something truly special and unique and something different in the world that also the world just needs more of, it's immediately clear, at least from a viewer perspective on my end when I was watching the show. So I just wanted to start off our chat with a congrats because it's a huge feat. And I'm so excited for our chat and just kind of where everything's going to go from here. So why don't we start off? Your character, Siaya, opens North of North by calling herself a, quote, a modern Inuk woman, whatever that means. What kind of central theme are you asking your audience to really consider with an opening line like that?
I think with that opening line, so in terms of representation of Inuit and people from a larger audience, like that are non-Inuit, they often don't understand Inuit in a current context. We're often seen as kind of historical figures or people that once were but no longer are. And to say like a modern Inuk woman, I think it really challenges what people understand about Inuit and how we exist in day-to-day life. And I think throughout the show, we really show that a modern Inuk woman looks, for the most part, like any other woman that exists that's going through family issues, relationship issues, making mistakes, making missteps, that, you know, a modern Inuk woman is just a woman that so happens to be Inuk. And even though, you know, we come from a place that looks a little bit different, maybe a lot a bit different from where other people are watching from, but our experiences are so similar.
Yeah, universal experiences for sure. I mean, it's immediately evident just even watching the first episode that there's, you know, circumstances and your character navigates the same challenges that a lot of people have, right? Whether that's like challenges with the family, with, you know, navigating your professional career, universal themes. On that note, you know, the show highlights a new generation reclaiming their stories. How does North of North really disrupt the common assumptions people hold about Inuit lives, Inuit women, and what it means to be young and Inuk today?
Yeah, it was really such a privilege, and, you know, such a, you know, thank you to the showrunners who wrote such layered characters and such interesting characters and imperfect characters. I think there's often like this belief that women have to be perfect, that we have to do things right, we have to be devoted to our families, and we have to, you know, be quiet, sit pretty, and really kind of fighting this idea of like what a woman should be. And Siaya says that right in the beginning, you know, I got married, I started a family, I was the wife that should have been the perfect life, but I was still unhappy. I still wasn't who I wanted to be. I still wasn't realizing my full potential. And so being able to have imperfect characters is, I think, so important. And I think it's important for, you know, Inuit youth to be able to see people who are imperfect, who have redemption arcs, who are able to start over and hold grace for themselves and for other people. I also just think it's, you know, again, so important to kind of redefine the Arctic and redefine, you know, what people think an Inuk woman should be or what that means, you know, to show the Arctic with so much warmth and lightness and love, even though it may be complicated at times. The North is often kind of portrayed as very dark and desolate and isolated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, elements of that are true. Of course, you know, we have the dark season, and of course it's isolated. There's no roads that connect us to each other in Nunavut. We're all separate communities that are fly-in only. But that isn't all that we are. That's a very superficial, I think, understanding, or a very superficial representation of who we are. It really kind of makes us, it defines us by our setting and not by who we are as people. Mm. So being able to really kind of get into the relationships and the stories of each of these characters and, you know, kind of who they are and how they live their day-to-day lives, I hope people have a better understanding of who we truly are and how our lives truly look. And it's also just nice to be an Inuk woman that's imperfect, but also has desires, who, you know, wants to date, who wants to get back out on the market and explore, and, you know, just wants various things for herself. I think it's just nice to see such layered characters, and really kind of redefining what people think the North is like, and who Inuit women are, what we should be.
Yeah. To your point, like a lot of complexity, nuance, the fact that, you know, Inuit culture, there's no monolith. There's such a diversity of perspectives and things in there. As I was watching the show, that was very evident, because there are so many layers in terms of just like the journey you take as a viewer, and, as you know, with the characters, in terms of like joy and struggle and humor and ambition, like so many of those things layered within. why do you think it's crucial as well to move beyond kind of what we've, I guess, historically seen with like indigenous as well as like minority centered narratives that are, you know, focused on trauma, we'll say, narratives when telling indigenous stories? Why do you think it was crucial just to be able to move beyond that and introduce and layer in all these different nuances and emotions?
I think for a lot of projects that that centered minority stories, often the kind of the tie to funding and stuff like that, the tie to funding, the tie to investment from funders tends to be that there needs to be an educational aspect to what you're sharing. And oftentimes the only way people are willing to understand the educational aspect or are willing to represent the educational aspect is through trauma, that you need to really like pull at people's heartstrings, or you need to provide some shock value, or there needs to kind of be something that really like sticks with people beyond or after the film is finished or after the you know show is finished, and that there needs to be this sort of like educational element for there to be value in the story. But I think the show really poses the question of why is the only educational value in trauma? Why is that the way that we get this message across? Why can't we do that through comedy and through laughter? And why are we kind of weighing out, you know, fear or sadness or mystery? Why does that outweigh joy in terms of intriguing people, in terms of, you know, drawing people in? And I think the show really is going to be and has been a strong example of like joy does bring in the audiences. People do want to see fun stories. And, you know, I think the showrunners and the writers, the showrunners who are the writers, what they did so beautifully with these scripts is that they really, you know, we get all of kind of the points of, you know, teaching people about the North and teaching people about Inuit culture and representing ourselves is so beautifully kind of laced into the script so naturally. And we get to kind of teach people about the North without being too on the nose or without really trying to be too straightforward. People are going to watch it and they're going to learn you know, various things without kind of feeling like it's a Hank Green lesson on YouTube or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's just so nice that this show, I think, can be a point of like, you can still educate people and there's still the value of telling our stories. Even if, you know, there isn't a necessarily quote unquote shock value factor that will, you know, grab audiences, we can do that just in being ourselves.
Also, the world is a stressful place right now, and we need as many sources of joy as we can find, honestly. So this is like something that people, I feel like, are just craving and desperately need and are hungry for, because everywhere you look, every hour, there is something on a headline that is just like, what is even happening, right?
Absolutely. I think there's so much like, there's like a bit of escapism in North of North. There, you know, you kind of get to escape to this world. And, you know, even though it's very like real and tangible for me and I grew up there, so it's just very like natural. But I think for some people, they'll relate to the storylines, they'll relate to the plot, but being able to experience a whole new landscape for the first time in a way that they've never seen it before, it yeah. just kind of takes you out of the current situation of whatever it may be, and kind of brings you into a place of lightness. And, you know, you can live vicariously through Siaya making mistakes. You can forget about your own for a second and just let Siaya do the work.
Yeah, exactly. one of the big, you know, themes in North and North is seems to be centered around like autonomy, and not just as an Inuk, but also as a woman within your own community. What does that kind of self-exploration look like when you're navigating both Indigenous but also gendered expectations?
Yeah, I think with Siaya, it was so powerful to be able to kind of have to do this story, which is basically like a second coming of age. Mm. You know, Siaya went into adulthood living by the expectations other people had of her, her community had of her, her husband had of her, her mother had of her. And I think, you know, in the early parts of the show, when, you know, Siaya decides that's no longer what she wants for herself, and Nivi, her mother, is like, you have a house, you have a husband, like, you're stable. What more could you ask for? You want to be happy? Like, this isn't some sort of like dream. This is real life. And Siaya not wanting to settle for that, I think, is so powerful. And being able to kind of release herself of the kind of restraint of expectations that she's lived by for so long is so powerful. And also this kind, I think there's often an expectation that like women, especially when it comes to dating, they can't desire too much. They can't want too much. They should be sought after and not be seeking. They're not allowed to be sexual beings. They're not allowed to openly have desires. And I think in this show, when CIA is like, no, I want a date. I'm going to try. And even if she fails, she tried. And I think to not have any sort of shame associated with that, and to show that like that's okay to want to explore, and to also get rid of that expectation of women being, you know, for lack of a better word, demure. Like, it's just, it's so refreshing. And I, you know, it's such a woman heavy show. It's a woman led show as well. So being able to, you know, have Siaya's experiences, which are so heavily based on real life experiences of, you know, community members, the showrunners, and what they've had to deal with as people, you know, so involved in community, and people who have dealing with the expectations of who they should be and how they should live their lives, being able to show Siaya fighting back against that, and that liberation that she has by the end of the season is so sick.
You know, I think what's so beautiful about the show too is that there's like a duality in that, on one hand, there is a very specific point of view and perspective and a look into, you know, accessing a culture and understanding a culture. But then on the other hand, there's so many narratives and universal themes that, you know, speaking for myself, like coming from like an Asian community, like I see people can see themselves reflected in a show. You know, when it comes to themes around not speaking up or being happy with what you have or autonomy or ambition. Like, there's just so many themes that everyone is currently navigating. And I think that that's what's so beautiful, what the show navigates so beautifully, is that duality and the universality, because these are themes that are, they're not new themes. These are things that people are tackling every day and have been tackling for a long time. And so I just think that that's a really wonderful thing that I think audiences is going to resonate so well with audiences and is resonating so well with audiences.
Yeah, it's been really beautiful to see the response in Canada and to see how many people do feel seen and heard, no matter what their background is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were so many elements of the show that really resonated with me when I read the scripts and were quite like at times difficult to film and really kind of struck chords within me, that I, you know, was like, I want to do this right because I know what this feels like, and I think it's important to represent this properly. So being able to kind of share these universal experiences with so many people, I hope people feel a bit seen and heard, and that, you know, they're not alone, because also there's so many of these things where it's like sometimes you feel like nobody really understands what you're going through, and it's so silly because it's like, of course people do. There's billions of people in the world. If somebody's got to understand somewhere,
yeah.
But it can still feel so lonely, and I think with with this show, we can, you know, take on little bits of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Can we also talk about the style in the show? Because I feel like the show makes a real intentional point of integrating style and Inuit fashion. And that was like one of the first things visually that I noticed was it was almost like its own character. And so how does, you know, what you wear on screen reflect identity, history, and even resistance to a point?
Yeah. I mean, the styling, in the show, the costume was so incredible, so impressive. You know, Deborah Hansen, who was our head of costume, absolutely amazing. And Nooks Lindell, who was our Inuk costume designer, the way that they worked together in tandem to kind of create something that was so, one, like, accurate and true to like how I grew up seeing people dress and how I want to be styled, and you know, it was such a privilege to have such an extensive closet. It was so exciting. But you know, it was just really, I think, important to highlight, you know, Inuit are incredibly fashionable in our own way, and there is such, you know, from region to region, there's different styles of clothing, there's different materials that are used, but something that is quite common amongst all regions is like the use of color, vibrancy. You know, you want to have, you know, your best items that are also really functional, that keep you warm, that that will help you survive in the Arctic. And, you know, the use of fur was something that was really, really important in the show. The showrunners were talking one day, and they were talking about, like, you know, if the use of fur, which it wasn't an issue, it was never an issue. But they were like, you know, because of the kind of anti animal product sentiment that does exist, they were like, what would be the benefits of using fake fur? And they were looking at it, and they were kind of watching it blow in the breeze, and they were like, no, real fur is just, there's nothing that quite beats it. And it is so integral to our survival. It has always been. And, you know, today there's still a large portion of our communities that, you know, still go hunting, that use hunting as a form of sustenance. And it's important for the community and for people to be able to stay warm, and to be able to go out and hunt and be out for hours and hours in, you know, extreme temperatures. And if, you know, God forbid something bad happens and they get stuck out there, that they have the proper clothing to keep them warm. So showing like real fur as we do use it was really, really important. And I think doing it so unashamedly, doing it with so much purpose and with so much style was a really important part of this show. And it's just, I think, you know, it's great representation in the show, but also supporting the local economy, supporting Inuit designers, Inuit seamstresses was so, so important. And it's been such a pleasure to see how many designers who contributed their work to the show and who, you know, sold items to us and stuff like that, seeing how excited they've gotten over being showcased in the show, and how many people have reached out to be like, where do I find this? Where do I find that? How do I get my hands on this pair of earrings? How do I get my hands on one of these jackets? It's just been so great. I think the styling in the show really, in so many ways, challenges, I guess, people's idea of style and how we do it. And, you know, Inuit fashion is often slow fashion and is very mindful. And, you know, you have one parka that lasts you like years and years and years and years. So kind of being able to showcase that has been really special. Supporting the local economy, very, very special. And it, you know, for me as playing Siaya and her closet and her wardrobe really informed the way that I understood her, that, you know, no matter what she was experiencing, she really held herself together through her dress. And she also really got to express herself, not through her clothing, but through her daughters. I think Siaya is really something that was really important with Siaya. You know, there's intergenerational healing. So Nivi's quite traumatized from what she experienced from her mother. And Siaya's quite traumatized from what she experienced from Nivi. But there's been generations of healing. And I think Bun is now an example of a kid who gets to be free and themselves. And you know, Siaya and Ting have created a space where Bun can dress as crazy or as zany or, you know, with as much color and as much sparkle as she wants, and really gets to express herself through that. And I think there's some healing in Siaya getting to see her child be who she wishes she could be with the freedom that she wishes she could have.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. That's, yeah, such a beautiful thing to see. One of the other, also just side note, I think just to your point around the local economy, like how exciting is it for these artists and local businesses and artisans to now see their work reflected on, you know, a global stage? Like that is just amazing and awesome. And I'm super excited for them. It's not a question, just a thought. So, you know, one of the other themes on the show is the idea of, or not theme, but like, you know, there's this idea that of the white savior, and, you know, that's been a problem obviously in indigenous communities for decades, whether it's through charities, politics, Hollywood. North of North doesn't shy away from calling that out, but, you know, I think it does a great job of calling it out in a way that is, again, like nuanced and layered. So why was it such an important topic to tackle, and how does the show handle it in the nuanced way that it does?
Yeah, I think the kind of concept of the white savior and people who have white savior complexes definitely very much still exist in the North. And they are people that, you know, all of us Inuit have some experience with to some extent. And I think the best example of that is Helen, the head of the community center. And, you know, it was really important that she was really like a nuanced character. She wasn't, some people will kind of like resort to calling her a Karen, and that just isn't true. She's not malicious. She's not harboring or hiding something much more dark. She genuinely cares about the community, and she is well-intentioned, and she has an Inuk husband, and she has been around a long time. She just takes up so much space, right. Which is something that we often see in these situations, is people who like have the best of intentions, but take up so much space and think that, you know, sometimes they think that they're like an outside perspective, so they're unbiased. Sometimes they think that, you know, because they're an outside perspective, they are able to find solutions and to address the problem without, you know, any other issues arising, or that, you know, they have a life experience or a platform or a privilege that they must share, and that they must be the ones to foster the environment for healing. And, you know, it is well-intentioned, but it is, come on, white lady, sit down, just like chill out.
Yeah.
And it, you know, has been, I think, really important, because some people are like, oh, like Helen, like, oh, she drives me crazy, you know, like this kind of like white savior. And it's like, yes, she's supposed to. But we can't, another kind of important part of North was understanding like the complexity of communities, and that you might not always like some people, or you might not always like what they do, but communities are small and you need to learn how to live and work together, despite how you may feel about them or how they may act. So kind of, you can't just write off Helen and, you know, or her accomplishments or what she's done for the community, because she has done a lot. So it's kind of the larger complicated conversation of white saviorism, and how to address these people in community. And there's no real answer for it in North of North. And I have no real answer for it as Anna. But it's, I think, been, I think, or I hope it's been holding up a mirror to some people who maybe don't realize just how much space they're taking up in minority communities. And maybe they'll kind of be a little bit more self-aware. Fingers crossed.
We can ask for that just at a bare minimum. That would be wonderful, right?
Yeah.
You know, speaking of taking up space in a way, one of the other big plot lines is about pitching the community as a research hub and fighting for funding. But beyond the show, this is happening in real life where there are big discussions around land use, development, and advocacy for Indigenous control. How do you think the storyline resonates with the larger discussions happening right now in the world around that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in the North, we're so not used to, but we have seen so much people who have come up and made decisions for us. And, you know, that's why we now have the land claims agreement. That's why, you know, Inuit fought for our right to our land and use of our land and protection of our land, because, you know, the exploitation of our land is what will eventually make it uninhabitable and has been what's been impacting, you know, migrational patterns in animals and, you know, the kind of heavy metals in the water and you know, runoff from like mines and places like that that are impacting our local ecosystems. And, you know, this situation is basically kind of copy and pasted all over Canada and all over the world. And I mean, it's just, there's no lack of conversation around it. There's so many conversations at so many levels in so many places about environmental exploitation, about exploitation of Indigenous peoples and our land and speaking over us and not trusting us to know what's best for our communities and for animals that we've, you know, survived on for thousands of years or time immemorial. I hope this is just kind of another conversation that is opened up, or it's opened up in a different place. And some people get to, you know, who maybe don't always, who have only ever heard about it kind of spoken about in academic settings or in a news setting, or maybe the only time they've seen it in film and television is in something quite dark and emotional and a bit like heavy. Being able to see it in a different format may open them up to learning about it a bit more and what we experience.
Yeah, I love that. You know, very exciting in that North of North is going to be reaching international audiences through Netflix, which is incredible, an incredible platform to be able to share these stories. What impact do you hope it what impact do you hope it has on global perceptions of Inuit life and Indigenous communities?
Yeah, I mean, I just really hope that people get to see the Arctic as it truly is. And, you know, the way that we've been defined for a long time as dark and desolate and all of those things, as mm-hmm. empty and uninhabitable, that's just not true. That we're vibrant communities and, you know, that we exist in a very current context. And also, you know, there's elements of, you know, showcasing hunting in Inuit communities, the hunting of a caribou and the sharing of meat with community, you know, the use of fur, language, the showcasing of Inuktitut in the show is very important.
Yeah. There's like a Dua Lipa cover. That was it. Yeah, that was amazing.
So it's so sick. And I'm still like so shocked that we have a Dua Lipa cover in Inuktitut of levitating. It's so cool. But like the importance of like language and language revitalization and, you know, that we, you know, still exist in a very current context, but our culture and what has sustained us for thousands of years is still very much intertwined and interlaced into our everyday life, and that these two things can coexist, our culture and our traditions and us as a current people, it's not one or the other. It's definitely both. Mm-hmm. I think it will redefine how people see the North and how people see us. And I also hope it, you know, creates some conversations for empathy. I think, I know I personally have had to deal with quite a lot of people who think that, you know, Inuit are evil for still hunting, that, you know, why can't everyone, you know, it's so like barbaric and it's so horrible. And it's like, well, no, there's an important relationship between Inuit and the land and animals, yeah, and a respect, and that is something that's still very much ingrained in our communities. And it's not the same sort of like exploitative farm cycle.
I was just about to say, I'm like, oh my gosh, the lack of self-awareness
that exists in commercial farming and yeah, stuff like that. And that, you know, hunting seals and the use of sealskin, these are still things that are really important to us, and people should at least try and understand where we come from and why it's important to us before they start, you know, telling us that we're evil.
Insane. What's the response been like from your own community and like Inuit audiences? What has that been like?
It's been unbelievable. I always knew that people were gonna like the show. There just was no way that, mm-hmm, no matter how, what angle I tried to approach it at, I was like, I just really can't, as an Inuk, I just really can't critique too much of the show. It is so real and so, I think, special in that way. But there was still like a level of anxiety of like, well, maybe I just didn't think of what could go wrong. Maybe I just don't, I'm just missing something. But we had shown the first two episodes in Eqadweit for the community before it aired in January. So we did the screening in December. And to hear people in the audience laughing and shouting out at the screen, gasping, and having all of the reactions that you would hope that they would have was so relieving. It was so exciting. And it was the moment where I felt like I could let my breath go and say, everything's going to be just fine. They love it. The community loves it. Inuit are going to love it. That's the most important thing to me at the end of the day, is that people feel represented, and they feel represented authentically and meaningfully. So, and then kind of as the episodes released throughout the weeks, on CBC, it just, you know, every single Tuesday, which is when we would release, I would, you know, my Facebook feed, because Facebook is the way that we, you know, Indigenous communities, I'm sure in Canada and North America, sustain Facebook so much. Like, it's like our main way of communication. I love Facebook. We'll never delete it. But it just was like my feed was always filled with people's reactions to the most recent episode and their thoughts and their feelings, or like sometimes it was people who created items for the show posting, you know, screen grabs, or literally just kind of like 5 feet away from their TV taking photos on their phone and stuff. Like, it just was so heartwarming to know that the show was having even more of an impact than I think any of us realized it would have. And that was really, really cool. And I'm excited for Alaskan Inuit and Greenlandic Inuit to be able to see the show as well once it hits Netflix.
So exciting. Last question here. What excites you the most about the future and the potential of the film industry in Nunavut, as well as just like the Arctic and the North, and just the cultivation of that industry?
Yeah, I am so excited. You know, through North of North, Stacey and Alethea, the showrunners, were able to secure funding for a studio, which is built in Iqaluit now, and I think is completed. So that's really cool. I think that's going to open up so many opportunities for things to film in the North, for people to have access to opportunities. And I really hope we see an incoming generation of Inuit talent that come out of Nunavut, that come out of Iqaluit. And I'm just really excited that, you know, through North of North, we get to show how much joy and how much joy can be a selling point in Indigenous film and television. Mm-hmm. And that there is so much value in these stories that center community and love and, you know, the elements of hardship within that, but that we can have really fun stories, that there's just as much value in that. And I hope that, you know, incites some sort of people will feel better about investing in things that center joy, and that we get to see more projects and more Indigenous projects that exist in that world. Rom-coms, comedies, you know, who knows what else.
Yeah. I lied. Actually, I have one more question. If you could summarize in maybe like one sentence, what do you think is something that you learned through your character, Siaya, that you didn't know about yourself before you started filming?
Something I learned through Siaya that I didn't know about myself before I started filming.
What does she teach you?
Siaya taught me that embarrassment is a temporary feeling and there's always something else that comes after.
I love that. Anna, thank you so much for our chat. I really, really enjoyed it. And I'm so excited for you, for the show, and just the community. It's such a good news story too, just in a world of just chaos. So it's really great to see.
No, thank you so much for the chat and the really thoughtful questions. I had a really nice time talking about all of the things. And yeah, it was really nice. Thank you.
That's a wrap on this episode of Mission Critical. If today's conversation gave you something to think about, do me a favor. Subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who needs to hear it. Big ideas are meant to be shared, and the best insights only matter if they're put into action. Until next time, stay sharp, stay curious, and go and make something happen. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical.